Production. Recorded live.
Hello, this is Lynn Hunsaker, your host for this talk show, Customer Experience Optimization. And I'm here with Ingrid Lindberg from CheapCustomer.com. I'm from ClearActionCX.com. And we're here to present the B2C and B2B views, respectively, on customer experience personas. So the agenda that we usually follow is, what is a customer experience persona and what's not? How do you establish it and how do you bring it to life? So Ingrid, how do you define a customer experience persona? Do you think that it's different from the mainstream personas? Do you have a view on how that all fits together?
Oh, Lynn, let's just jump right in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. So I can't answer how I define a customer experience persona without touching on the what it isn't. I generally tend to back into that. So I'm going for a twofer answer. Feel free
like
to jump
that.
In.
Sure.
So I believe that a customer experience persona is a design tool and an empathy building tool. And the counter to that is what I think it isn't, which is a segmentation model. So when I talk about personas versus segments, I tend to spend a lot of time, especially with the marketing people. You know, I'll walk into a new company and they'll say, well, we've got a persona set. And as soon as they start talking about Mary, who's 45 years old and employed here, and they start getting into all that indicative socioeconomic stuff, I kind of do the timeout, that sounds like a segment, not like a persona. So when I think about personas, I think about them as descriptions of different people based on how they kind of think and feel, not so much based on who they are on paper. So needs-based versus socioeconomic indicative data. Design-based, not to segment for marketing materials, and an empathy builder, not an identifier. So that's kind of my pro, because there's really no cons in that, is there?
Well, I agree with all of that. And, you know, I've always found it helpful to discover the history behind a topic before launching into, using it. Because if you look at how personas came about, the first time I was exposed to it was, it was back at the time when integrated marketing communications was kind of new, at least in B2B, sometime in the 90s. At least in my company, we were in the semiconductor industry, and we were twice as big as the next competitor. We had multiple product lines, and most of our competitors had a single product line. So in the trade journals, We had a lot of decentralized marketing, and so we had, you know, this product ad here and this product ad there, and it didn't really look like the same company. And I remember going to a really neat meeting where they talked about us coordinating more, and one of the ways to do that was that they had hired an ad agency to help us with it all, and they interviewed our customers, and then they were describing them as like, well, this type of semiconductor equipment buyer drives a Jeep and does this and that, and, you know, this one has the pickup and this one has the Maserati or, you know, whatever it was. And I just thought, well, that's really interesting in a B2B situation. We're really personalizing these segments. So that's how I was introduced to it, and I think that there's a lot of value to in that particular context, picturing the person. So you're taking a market segment and picturing the typical person in that market segment, because if you're doing ads, then you want to immediately help the reader say, hey, that's me, right? That's the first step. They have to associate themselves with the ad. And if you know exactly what type of car they're driving and whatnot like that, so I think that's useful. However, where I see it really falling down is in the customer experience area for the most part. So first of all, I think that customer personas in the traditional sense are very useful for ads and content marketing, digital marketing, and then possibly for sales and service, your customer-facing employees, to have that empathy or to immediately identify, like, okay, this type of this type of person is probably from this type of segment, market segment, and these are their interests. But I think that it pretty much stops there and is not very useful for customer experience management, and I'll get into that in a second. But how does that jibe with your experience then in working over the years?
My intro.
Yeah.
So
how does that
that's
jibe
a great
with
look back. What a look back, Lynn. You always make me go all the way back to the beginnings of my career. I appreciate that. So in the late 90s was the first time that I was introduced to personas as a concept. And I was actually introduced to personas as a concept from Alan Cooper's famous book, The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. He kicked that out in like 97 or 98, somewhere in there. And I'll never forget, I was working in financial services, and I was actually working in software in financial services. So business-to-consumer financial services software. And this was, you know, the advent of the web, right? I mean, this is so funny when I say that out loud. I'm like, yeah, we didn't have things like Google. and I remember reading that book, and I remember thinking, oh my gosh, there's this way that we can start to think about how different people use this tool that we're building, right? There's this, this way that we can think about how different people use this tool that we're building. And, you know, I worked with a bunch of marketers because this is when digital really didn't have a home, so it was generally kind of tucked under marketing or technology, right? Those were the two homes. And all the marketers were like, segment, 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 right? It's a segment. And the more I understood what Cooper was trying to do, the more interested I became in this idea of how do you take these fictitious characters and use them to solve design questions, right? So for me, the use of personas in customer experience, and I very rarely see them being used well, to your point, very rarely see them being used well. But I have found and have used for almost 20 years now, using personas to answer design questions now in multi-channel worlds has been very helpful for my customer experience practice. So, you know, we can talk examples a little bit later today, but I think it's a tool that often is misunderstood and thus misused. So people will set up a persona set and then not really get the big bang for the buck because they aren't actually using those people and those people types to get to the root of what they're trying to solve in such a way that it solves it for all of the different persona types. So introduction was all digital. You know, have learned how to apply those time and time again as we've introduced more and more channels, and thought about customer experience truly as not just user experience in that very traditional sense. Does that answer your question, Lynn? I feel like that was a long roundabout way.
Right. I appreciate that because every branding book that I ever read is like first or second chapter. Decide what behavior you want your customers to have and then design, you know, your marketing and your branding to accomplish that. So I find two problems with that. One is, ideally, you're going to listen to your target audience first to decide to understand their realities, and then how do you want to help them, see your brand within the context of the realities? what do you want to help them achieve through your marketing and your customer experience management? And I think that secondarily, then you can design the customer experience to exceed their expectations, but you certainly don't want to just gerrymander, you know, kind of manipulate customers based on a preconceived notion that you just come up with in a relative vacuum. The second part of it is that I believe that marketing is really a matter of conveying the brand promise accurately and compellingly. So what gets lost so much is the accurate part. The compelling part is marketers pretty well on that. But what happens is then if we overpromise in our brand promise, then we have these gaps that cause dissatisfaction, and then we have all these extra customer experience management practices and technologies and things that we take a lot of pride in, but actually they're just trying to fill those gaps that were caused by the over-promising and under-delivering. So that's why I think that, you know, some of the traditional methods are flawed and actually costing us a tremendous amount of money down the line. I do believe that, you know, to help have empathy and to help design things, that type of persona is useful, as well as the other things that I've described as well, earlier for customer facing and advertising, digital and content. But here's what I'm thinking that you need to do for your brand promise. You need to have all of your people in the back offices being tuned in to this customer persona, or the, you know, who your segments are, or whatever the customer life cycle is, and the whole journey. You need to have something that's actionable for the people in the back office. And that's where I'm coming from with my initial statements that traditional ways of doing customer personas are not that useful for customer experience management.
Right. So I think it's all in that definition. You know, I think that's where it gets really interesting, right? So the kind of traditional ways of doing personas that look way too much like segments versus what I would say are kind of the new ways of doing personas. And I have to admit, I'm a full Cooper junkie. I am one of those people who every time I sell business, every time I work with a client, every time I'm helping a, you know, any type of company set up their customer experience strategy, one of the things that I always recommend is that you hire someone to really come in and help you create that persona set in kind of the new definition, right? So the empathy builder, the design tool, right? In that world, not in kind of the old, using the old terms that marketers would use about segmentation. And it's been interesting. I think this is such a clear story on how we would think about this or how we applied it. I was working with a firm and we were designing a tool on how people would actually choose their doctor, okay? So we know that it's a really important decision that people in this country have to make almost on an annual basis, is who, you know, who is going to be my doctor and who is a doctor that my insurance company has approved. And, you know, it was one of the first times that we had taken a persona set outside of just the customer experience design team and into kind of the depths of the organization, into this technology team that was working to design this tool. And it was, you know, it was one of those moments where, you know, I kind of laugh about it now, because we had life-size cutouts of all of these personas, and we had, you know, people who acted as that persona, right? So they went into full character in that room. And people kind of roll their eyes at me when I tell this story, but I have to tell you, it was so impactful, right? So impactful, because the assumptions that were being made purely based on data, right? So the data, all the click tracks, all showed that people really wanted to get to information fast, and, you know, here were the things that mattered to them. And so the design that was coming forward was, you know, really narrow, right? Really narrow. It was about speed and efficiency. And when we brought those personas into the room, you know, once again, all based on ethnographic interviews, spending tons and tons of time with people to figure out these behavior sets and these needs-based behavior models, you know, we were able to have a dialogue with this very large team of programmers and quality people, and, you know, everyone who makes the stuff actually come to life, right? The marketers who are going to talk about it. And we were able to get them to understand that, yep, speed and accuracy were really important, but speed and accuracy were only important to these two people. And these three people had deeper, broader questions or needed more guidance or had a different decision-making pattern. And it was, you know, it was one of the most important stops on a journey that a customer would have with this company. And it was just fascinating when we were able to actually design this tool to not just meet the needs of one or two person types, but to successfully meet the needs of all five. That was probably one of my favorite examples, right? Because there's so many things that we build that are great for that one person that we saw through research or that one person type we saw through research. But being able to craft design that answered the needs of many, not just the answering the needs of one, was a pretty impactful moment, at least for my career.
Well,
so that's
love
how
that.
I use it.
Well, you know, with Omnichannel, there's a lot of use of personas to try to understand, you know, where people are coming in to the company with different needs. And so, you know, whether they're using mobile or the website or telephone or email or, you know, whatever, the store or the kiosk, they want to make sure that they're catering to the customer. So that's definitely a noble intention. What I loved about your story is you're using ethnography to really observe what's going on with the customer and to try to get a pure view of their realities, and then finding some patterns there around their needs. So those were the key things that I loved about that. And I'll tell you what changed my whole thinking about personas was when I was preparing to write this book. You can get it on Amazon Kindle, called Innovating Superior Customer Experience. And, of course, I've read all the customer experience stuff since the late 80s, early 90s, and I've worked in this field since that time. I was quite aware of all of that, and I've been working in Silicon Valley since the early 90s, so I know a lot about innovation, but Innovating Superior Customer Experience was kind of a meeting of the two fields, and I came across some really awesome materials. One of them was this book called What Customers Want. It's written by Anthony Ulwick. He's tremendous, just a huge hero of mine. And in What Customers Want, I got a complete new perspective on all of this. And this has made me kind of a renegade, so to speak, when it comes to a lot of customer experience management. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but mainstream kicker or something like that. So what I came to understand through the research he had done and a lot of client work he did with a wide variety of industries was that people have a need for across each step of their customer experience journey to see more of something or see less of something. And if you just characterize what they want more of and what they want less of, to meet their objectives, what are they ultimately buying your thing for? You know, they're ultimately buying it for peace of mind or enjoyment or risk management, risk aversion, or avoid pain, to grow or to be able to just live their life. So I call those capabilities, Anthony Ulwick calls them jobs to be done. Can call them what you want, but there's an ultimate reason why people are interfacing with your company, and if you keep that as the grand context, and then you make note in your ethnography or journey mapping research or whatever you want to call it about these needs along the way, then you're creating a persona that is very relevant to managing the customer experience and very relevant to every single functional area in helping you do that. And if you're the brand manager or marketer, you can also rest assured that you're going to have a lot more success in having that brand promise come true. And
right,
I think
that's
the nirvana that we're all seeking, isn't it? To have everybody on the same page in the company.
Well, and what's so funny to me is just because you quote-unquote own the brand, that's always the funniest statement to me, right? Your brand owner, your brand manager, you have absolutely zero control in how that promise is being delivered throughout the course of all the builds and service deliveries that occur on a daily, minute-by-minute basis, right? So I found that it really truly is the closer you can bring the employee population to the persona set, the further you'll be able to stretch and go. And, you know, we're kind of jumping all around in our questions, as we always do, Lynn.
Well, we cover them, though. They're
we
all
always cover them. We always cover them. But what I think is so interesting, or what I found to be so interesting, and it's it was probably a month ago, I wrote a blog on a tool that I've created called a customer experience immersion room. And you can find that out on chiefcustomer.com, super easy, under the blogs, Haunted House of Customer Horrors. It's super funny. But the moral of the story is that tool, when I first built that tool, I would just show employees what it was like to be a customer of a company. So you'd walk through this room and you'd see all the bad stuff. And as I've become more mature in my practice over a couple decades here, about, 5-6 years ago, we started building these rooms based on persona. So you would walk in as an employee and you would be handed one of our personas. So you got incredibly comfortable with who that person was, how they felt, and how they would experience working with that company based on who they were. So we really did like think museum guided tours, right, where you put on your headset and you walk through a guided tour of an exhibit. And what we were able to do by doing that was we were able to very quickly create, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 employees who all could represent very clearly one of these people types and one of their sets of needs. And, I've heard from people who are like, well, every employee needs to understand all of the personas. And like, yeah, the reality of it is you generally have at least 10 people in every room, right? Every meeting has at least 10 people in it, it feels like these days. And the simple ability to have introduced a large employee population to the 5 or 6 people types that are working with you and trying to receive services from you. When you have 10 people in a room, the likelihood of having every persona represented is pretty strong. And we found that really making that connection and making it very real, right, it was much more than putting them on a calendar or, introducing people to the personas through web tools. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can do it. But that one is the one that really has had, at least in my experience, the biggest impact on that cultural ability to deliver on a brand promise, because it reminds everybody who it is they're actually trying to serve. And yeah, it's cool, right? It's really cool when you see the output of that. Does that make sense, Lynn?
I totally believe that you need to wallpaper your employees' world, whether it's digital or physical or a combination, with things that help them empathize and remember what's important to customers. Now, here's how I saw this all come to life with a client. They're in the construction industry, and they made products that were used by commercial construction people, hardware dealers, retail, residential, high-end, industrial, institutional. So that's the way that they were usually segmenting their customers, and then they were looking at personas along those lines traditionally. Well, the research that we did, we were just looking for expectation sets across the whole customer journey as an overarching theme, So if we could find out what the different expectation sets are, then we could simplify management throughout the entire company to cater to certain expectations. Because when it comes right down to it, like I mentioned, brand promise is you're putting something out there saying, here's what we stand for, here's what you can expect from us, and then customers expect it. And so basically, all of business management boils down to are you meeting customers' expectations, and therefore they continue giving you money and engaging and recommending you and all that kind of stuff. So everything else is ancillary to that. So what we found very interestingly as patterns is that there were a group of customers, a large group of customers who were very time sensitive. And then there was another large group of customers who were very simplicity sensitive. And yes, they had a lot of other things, but it really boiled down to those two things. You had to absolutely be accurate with your timing. I'm going to give you this at this time, or this is going to happen. Couldn't be loosey-goosey with, a 4-hour window or, a 2-day window or, we got it there the next day, or we got it there the day before, or anything like that. It just had to be accurate. And when we helped them see the consequences to the customer of not doing it that way, that the customer was having such pain that they actually were splitting their orders with other providers. They wanted this brand, but it was just too risky for them. It was the consequences were so severe that they were, you know, giving their money to their competitors. And this wasn't even being taken into account in any of the managerial decisions for like severity and frequency of issues happening. And so it was a complete eye-opener when we had all of the functional areas in the room discussing this. And initially they did not want to entertain any other way of looking at their customers than their traditional demographic and psychographic methods. Now, the other group this was simplicity focused. There was a huge reason for that, and also massive consequences if you didn't cater to their simplicity needs, because they're juggling like a dozen or two dozen different types of products or different types of projects, and this one type of product or service was just one of so many. And so when the company was trying to introduce a new order management system that was supposed to be better or easier, it wasn't better or easier for those guys. And so these were completely eye-opening, and because there were only two in this case, it was much more simple than the eight or nine personas that they had traditionally had. When we looked at it, it also because of the way we were looking at the needs and the ethnography part of it, we were able to help the every single functional area see what they could do better, like the HR person in the room. You know what? To support these two needs, we could do this and this. Or the finance person is like, well, yeah, we ought to, you know, change this and this so that we can be more accommodating of both the time-sensitive and the simplicity-sensitive groups in our customer base. So that was a tremendous eye-opener for them. It was very gratifying to see it all come to life and to see the rapid changes that they were able to make from that. It was extremely empowering to many, many functional areas joining together to have a better track record in meeting the brand promise.
Love it. I love the stories, right? We all learn from the stories. So, Lynn, we only have a few minutes left. So
yep.
I think we should give everyone on the phone and people who listen to our recordings later just kind of the top three tips on what to do with personas or how to bring them to life. So you get to go first. What are your top three tips on how do you best use personas or how do you best bring them to life?
Well, first of all, look for patterns and expectation sets of your customers. And segment your customers based on expectation sets instead of what I think is pretty random. The demographics and psychographics are more random and not as meaningful to all of your functional areas. So then the third thing is engage all of the – don't be shy. There's quality, safety, facilities. In every single functional area, help them see what they can do to – do their part to make sure that the ripple effect of what their work is aligned, 100% aligned to these customer expectations. What are
love
your
it.
Three?
Love it, love it. So number one, I would say use a professional to get them built. That's my number one tip because I've watched company after company try to build them themselves or try to kind of pull apart a segmentation model and turn it into a persona model. And, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, you can pay someone to do this who does this for a living. So number one, get a professional. Number two, when you have the data, I find that the true super inner design data is your customer experience team's superpower. So there's pieces of personas I love to release broadly to an organization so that everybody can have a piece of it or touch it and start to build that empathy. But I think that the design using personas is really a customer experience architect's superpower. So being able to line up your architects so that they truly are designers using personas and have a really great way of doing that that's repeatable and reliable and produces an artifact that your internal clients can expect is a great way to achieve consistency and credibility with persona design. And number three, and I think this is the biggest one, is you have to figure out ways to get those personas into all of the daily bits of life inside that company. Whether you put them on the intranet, whether you put them into calendars, whether you have full-size cutouts hanging out around campus, videos of these personas. I mean, there's a thousand ways you can bring these personas to life and make sure you use them. It's omni-channel at its finest internally for your employee population. So those are my three.
I love it. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation where we're exploring two sides of the same equation, B2C and B2B. And please visit our websites and join us on our social media. Ingrid Lundberg is from chiefcustomer.com, and I'm Lynn Hunsaker from clearactioncx.com. Hope to see you next month on Customer Experience Optimization Talk Show. Thanks a lot.